So, we're going to continue where we left off in Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 7, text 24. Of course, in the previous verses, Krishna was discussing those who surrender unto him and those who do not. He also went into detail about the jnani, the one who surrenders essentially out of pure love. And then he talked about deity, or demigod worship, right? Why people worship the demigods. Of course, their knowledge is stolen by illusion. And essentially, he describes himself as the power behind demigod worship. And both the demigod themselves as well as the worshipper are dependent in on all levels on Krishna. Right? Okay, so let's take a look at text 24. Now Krishna shifts the topic and describes the impersonalists. Avyaktam vyaktam apanam maninte mam abuddhayaha param bhava bhajananto mama abhyayam manuttamam. Unintelligent men who do not know me perfectly think that I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, was impersonal before and have now assumed this personality. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know my higher nature, which is imperishable and supreme. So, vyaktim avyaktam, vyaktim apanam. So they think that the manyata, they think that Krishna was avyakta and then he became vyakta, right? That he was, you know, essentially impersonal, without form, without qualities, without personality, just a shunya, you know, either a void or an impersonal light. And then somehow this impersonal light, as it came into the material world, took the form of a person and became manifest, you know? Like there's nothing there in the absolute truth. There's no form or qualities or anything. But when the absolute truth comes to the world, then it becomes vyakta. Then it becomes manifest. Then it takes on qualities and personality. Right? In fact, what the Mayavadis in particular believe, the Advaita Vedantists, is that the absolute truth is completely impersonal. And yet this material existence is a kind of illusion. It's a projection onto the Brahman, sort of like a dream, you know? That in essence there's no, you know, reality is impersonal Brahman, it's that light, and yet because we're an illusion, we project a kind of a vivarta, a dream, an illusion onto it, which gives a perception of form and quality and personality. Can you close the door, please? So essentially, you know, the absolute truth is impersonal. And then once you have the qualities of form, quality, personality, you're dealing in the realm of illusion. Right? Because essentially we're in like a dream, we're in a vivarta. The example is given of like taking a rope to be a snake. You know, you're looking at a rope and you actually see a snake. You may have an experience of like you're driving down a country road and you see a rope sitting there, and just for a split second it appears to be a snake. You've projected a snake onto something that's not a snake, and you actually see it. You see the head, you see the eyes, you see the fangs. So the Mayavadis believe that you have the reality is this impersonal light, and that what we experience, this world of, you know, earth, air, fire, water, right? This world of form and personality and qualities, we're more or less out of illusion. We're projecting something that is not Maya onto this impersonal light. You see? And so all reality that we experience with name, form, qualities, individuality, personality, this is all a dream. It's all an illusion. It's a fantasy that we're projecting under reality. And once you wake up into enlightenment, that whole fantasy vanishes. You know, like you, when you become enlightened, there is no more material world, right? You've come out of the illusion, you've woken up from the dream, and material existence and you know, anything except the singular Brahman, the One, anything but that vanishes. You see, it no longer exists because you're no longer projecting an illusion onto it. And therefore, when you see God, what we call God, like the personality of Godhead, he's actually within the material world. He's part of that illusion. He's the highest part of the illusion. He's like the first, when that one, that, you know, undivisible one, when it enters, when it's perceived from the world of illusion, and it sort of drops down into the realm of illusion, it becomes, you know, the prime ego, the first individual from which the other individuals all separate, and then you get, you know, innumerable living and individuals manifest. But that first individual, that first sort of like that first ignorance, that first Maya, as the impersonal one drops into the world of duality, that's what we call God. Right? So when we speak of Krishna, we're speaking of the first ignorance, the big ignorance of the material world. But really what God is ultimately is the impersonal oneness, and we're all part of that. And, you know, the whole world is the world of duality, including ourselves as individuals, and including God as an individual, is all an illusion. And therefore, when God manifests in the material world as an avatar, as Krishna, Ram, Narsingha, right, then these various avatars are that impersonal light becoming manifest, vyakta, into the world of illusion. It's kind of like the impersonal Brahman is sort of like pretending to be, or I say manifest within the world of illusion as illusion. Does that make sense? And so that's what this means, avyaktam vyaktam apanam. Right? They believe that from the avyakta, it's manifesting, you know, I'm basically the impersonal light manifest here as a person, as an illusion, within the realm of illusion. Hmm? But what does Krishna say? Ma abuddhaya, these people are unintelligent, right? This is an unintelligent conclusion. Param bhavam ajananto. They don't know my param bhavam. They don't know my transcendental nature. They don't know that there's a transcendental personality with transcendental qualities. They don't know there's a spiritual world, Goloka, Vaikuntha, where beyond the impersonal Brahman, you have God as a person on the eternal platform. I see. They don't know about that. Param bhavam ajananto, mam avyayam anuttamam. And Krishna, you know, who is avyayam, he's imperishable, and he's anuttamam, he's the finest, he's the highest. Yeah? Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. He's the highest level of existence, he's the highest truth, the absolute truth. Okay? Prabhupada says here, those who are worshippers of demigods have been described as less intelligent persons, right? They were alpa medhasa, meaning they have small brains, little brains. And here the impersonalists are similarly described. Lord Krishna in his personal form is here speaking before Arjuna, and still, due to ignorance, impersonalists argue that the Supreme Lord ultimately has no form. Yamadacharya, a great devotee of the Lord in the disciplic succession of Ramanujacharya, has written a very appropriate verse in this connection. He says, Tvam shila dupa chadatai padama prakrishtai satvena satvikataya prabhalayischa shastrai prakhyata daiva paramarta vidambatashchai naivasada prakritaya prabhavanti bodhum. My dear Lord, devotees like Vyasadeva and Narada know you to be the personality of Godhead. By understanding different Vedic literatures, one can come to know your characteristics, your form, and your activities, and one can thus understand that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But those who are in the modes of passion, ignorance, the demons, the non-devotees, cannot understand you. That's the asuras, right? They are unable to understand you. However expert such non-devotees may be in discussing Vedanta and the Upanishads and other Vedic literatures, it is not possible for them to understand the Personality of Godhead. So that's from the Srota Ratna. So, Tvam shila rupa chadatayi. So your form, your qualities, your activities, chadatayi, your pastimes, right? All of these things, parama prakrishtayi. So they're all, basically, you're beyond the modes of nature, right? And you can only be understood by those who are sattvic, yeah? And so the demons, basically, they can't understand you. Naiva asura prakritaya. So those who are asuras and materialistic, they can't understand you. And therefore, in this verse, as Krishna is saying, abuddhaya, that means you're not intelligent. So within the Vedic culture, and particularly how Prabhupada uses the word intelligence or buddha, it doesn't mean that, you know, you can calculate abstract mathematical equations in your mind. I mean, that's certainly a kind of intelligence, right? But really what buddhi means, intelligence, it means the ability to see things in their proper perspective, the ability to see things correctly, to understand things correctly. And therefore, one who's situated in the absolute truth, has the proper conception of the absolute truth, that's intelligence, right? And so, and how do you see things from the proper perspective. Well, as it's saying here, sattvena sattvikataya. So you have to be situated in the mode of goodness, at least. Okay. So anyway, and essentially you have to be a devotee, ultimately. You have to be a devotee of the Supreme Lord in order to understand the Supreme Lord. So you have to be situated in a proper practice, in a proper consciousness, and have a proper understanding in order to understand the personality of Godhead. If you're not situated, and we know as devotees that that's a struggle, right? It's a struggle to be situated with proper knowledge and be situated in the right consciousness. You have to work at it because we're not by nature there. We're by nature asuras. We're by nature demoniac. You know, we're materialists. We're after prakriti. We're trying to enjoy prakriti. And therefore, it's very hard for us to understand the Supreme Lord. But as devotees, because, you know, by the grace of Krishna and Guru, we have Buddha. We have proper intelligence. Therefore, we understand the process of establishing ourselves in the mode of goodness and in devotional service, which will allow us to understand the personality of Godhead. But not everybody has that. Not everybody has that understanding. Not everyone understands the requirements. Not everyone accepts the requirements to understand God. And therefore, those who don't understand, they can't develop the qualification. And the result is when they look towards the personality of Godhead, they get all sorts of misconceptions. Right? And it's basically, if you don't have the purity of heart, and if you're not non-envious, you can't understand Krishna. He mentions this elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita, right? Even he mentions in the 18th chapter that you're not even supposed to explain Bhagavad Gita to the envious, because they can't understand it, right? To the envious, to the non-devotees, those who are not austere, yeah? Ashadana purusha dharmasyasya prantapra aprantapa aprapyamam nivartante. So the ashradadhana, those who don't have faith, those who are not able to develop the right qualities needed to understand the personality of Godhead, then they simply take birth again and again and again and cannot approach the personality of Godhead, can't approach Krishna. Okay? Yeah?
So is it that, like, for someone who is naturally envious of Krishna, it's not like they have to just automatically, like, say, okay, non-envious. Is it that the process of, like, being non-envious is to engage and, like, try to do service and read Bhagavatam and Gita, and then naturally become non-envious of Krishna?
Sure, you can say that. I mean, we're all envious towards Krishna in the sense that we desire to enjoy the material world. That's an exhibition of our envy, right? We're desiring to be the enjoyers, and Krishna's the enjoyer. We want to take his position. So sure, it's a gradual process of becoming non-enviousness. Becoming non-envious. But there's a certain quality that we need within ourselves before we're even willing to begin that process, right? And so that there's a certain willingness. There has to be, as we read in these previous verses, there has to be that piety. You have to be a sukriti, not a duskriti, right? You have to be willing to surrender to the personality of Godhead. Like there's a certain level of piety and devotion towards the Lord that has to be there. You know? Like Krishna says, Udara Sadhavaiti, right? Ganitakmai Vamematam. So they're all magnanimous souls, meaning that they all have devotion to Krishna on a certain level. So there has to develop within you a certain amount of devotion before you even begin the path. Yeah? And that devotion takes the form of, you know, you want to worship the Supreme Lord. You're willing to surrender. You're willing to take the position of servant and allow him to be master. Right? You're willing at least to bow your head, you know, and to manmanava bhava madbhakta madhyajimam namaskaru. You're willing to engage in a process that's essentially recognizing the Supreme Lord as the absolute enjoyer, as your Lord and Master. And so you have to be non-envious in that way. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, you know, yesham tvantakatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandva nitya, I'm sorry, te dvandva mohan, I forget the last line. Te dvandva moha nityam, So anyway, in that particular verse, it's mentioning that to those who are completely purified of all sinful activities, yeah, and they engage in worship of Krishna with dridha vrata, with firm determination. So in order to develop that firm determination, you know, there has to be some purification. It's like kind of like a gradual development. But it really begins by the mercy of a devotee. You may be very envious towards the Supreme Lord, but somehow or other, somewhere along the way in the path, in your past, someone engaged you in devotional service. Right? You were totally materialistic, you're lost in samsara, but then the devotees arrange a big preaching program, or, you know, the Rath Yatra cart is going down the street, and you just happen to see the Supreme Lord, right? Or you hear the holy name of Krishna. Or somehow or other, you engage in some form of worship. And because of that, then your whole process has begun.
So what about if they have association with a devotee? Is that a form of...
Well, if the association is centered around Krishna.
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, without them knowing, you know, you might give them prasad, they might do something for you.
Yeah, yeah. It's called the jnata sukriti, meaning like you don't really know what the value of it is.
Yeah.
You know? You don't really know what it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you get it anyway. I mean, it's all a jnata sukriti. Like, we don't really know who Krishna is or what Krishna is or what's the value of it. Even like if you read, you know, the Shastras for the first time or Prabhupada's books, you don't really even know what it's talking about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow or other, you know, it's that service. And therefore, that's a jnata sukriti. And you're moving forward, and you know, it could take many lifetimes, could take one lifetime, but gradually, you're developing an attraction to Krishna and a recognition of his personality and qualities. And you develop piety, you know, like you recognize that he's the Supreme Lord and you want to serve him. And the more pious you are, then you're kind of non-envious, right? The more you have that devotional quality, essentially that there's like a characteristic there where you're willing to, you know, like when once you understand Krishna's glories, you're willing to submit, right? Like I can see in my own personal life, like when I first, you know, I was an impersonalist. I mean, I believed in God kind of in my heart and stuff, but I was an impersonalist and, you know, I was a Buddhist or whatnot. And, but then once I had actually heard some Tibetan masters had actually said, you know, in one book I was reading, God is real. And I was like, wait a minute, what? You know, because I was thinking there's no God, you know, and God is real. And I was like, wait a minute, these are like my gurus, you know. What are you talking about, God is real? Like, then if God is real, all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, God's real. Like, I accepted what they said. It's like, God's real. Well, then I should be worshiping him. You know what I mean? Like, God is real. So that means the absolute truth is God, you know. Like, I have to develop a relationship with him. Like, shouldn't we be doing that? Like, why are we just, if God is real, why are we sitting here ignoring him? You know, like, we should be worshiping him, right? So, you know, not to toot my own horn or whatever, but that's an expression of piety, right? As Krishna, the Sukriti, that it's like, okay, you know, you're non-envious, right? Immediately, as soon as you hear about God or you understand who God is and God is real and stuff, the immediate reaction is, wait a minute, I should worship him. You know, I should bow down to him, and shouldn't, like, the goal of my life to be developing a loving relationship with him? Shouldn't the goal of my life to, like, be basically to use all my energy and all my power and my entire life to glorify him? Isn't that what we should do if he's there? You know, isn't that like perfection? Shouldn't we just throw ourselves at him and let him catch us and put all of our faith and everything in him? So if you're pious, then once you understand about Krishna or hear about him, then you'll immediately, that'll be your reaction. If you're not pious and you hear about the Supreme Lord, you're not going to think that way. You're going to be like, ah, it's okay. You know, okay, God is real. Yeah. So what, you know? Let me go do something else, right? Because there's an enviousness there. You want to be the enjoyer. You don't like the fact that God's in that position. And you hold it against him. You know what I mean? You've got a conflict. You've got a struggle against God on a very deep level. Yeah.
So this is where we get that mystic realization of God in those moments?
You mean when we're fully surrendered to him?
When the switch goes on, that we have to worship God in a form.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's, you know, that's part of it. Yeah, it's certainly a mystic thing. What's going on out there?
Prem saying hi.
What's he doing?
Saying hi to
you. Oh. Okay, so, that's very nice. So, yeah, when you, you know, when that's basically, I'm just trying to think of a spiritual interpretation here. It's like, you know, that's really what the devotee does towards Krishna, right? Like, as soon as you start clapping, either you're clapping before the deities or you're clapping, you know, in kirtan, or even that's kind of like prayer, you know, you're trying to call his attention, right? He's sitting there in the spiritual world dancing with the gopis and he hears, you know,
yeah,
you know, and it's like, wait a minute here, hold on a second. Somebody's, what is that? Somebody's calling me, you know, from
way. They don't want to turn because they don't want to interrupt.
So, so, like, you know, way down there in the material world, he's like two stories down.
Wow.
You know, then, you know, it's like, wait a minute, what's going down over there, right? So, you know, basically you're calling Krishna. But why is Prem Sankirtan trying to get your attention, right? Is it because he doesn't like you?
We're good friends.
Because you're good friends, you know, because he's not envious of you, right? And therefore he's willing to take a step towards you to try to engage in a relationship, you know? Whereas if he doesn't like you and he sees you, what's he going to say? Like, he sees you upstairs in the window. What's he going to do when he walks by? He doesn't like you. Yeah, he's going to, you know, if you're lucky, right? He might even throw something at the window. Yeah, right. If he's really envious, then he'll, like, you know, throw a rock at you or something, right? But, you know, if he just doesn't like you, he'll probably just go, oh. I mean, I do that, right? There's a lot of people I don't like. So it's like, you know, I'm walking by and I see somebody I don't like. It's like, oh my God, you know, please don't look at me. You know, please don't talk to me. You know, let me just keep walking. Don't look in my direction, right? I won't look in yours. I'll just keep going. Duck behind a car or something, you know? So that's what most people, if you're not pious or you have some envy in your heart, then that's how you are towards God, right? Oh, look, there's God. Oh, God, please don't look at me. Right? I'm going this way. I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to have any kind of relationship. But, you know, if there's a small degree of piety inside you, then, you know, in times of crisis, right, you need money, you need, you're suffering, or even you're just inquisitive, right, then you'll actually turn to God. You know, even if he really, even externally, he may not like you very much, but if, you know, he really does inside kind of appreciate you and like you and have some affection for you, then when he's in, you know, say a car comes down to the parking lot and hits him, you know, he'll be like, you know, please help me, you up there, right? Because, you know, he doesn't, there's still kind of like a level of affection there on a deeper level. So even if you're not super pious, then you'll still, in times of distress, you'll take shelter of Krishna. But the advice is that you try to develop that willingness to surrender, that willingness to glorify Krishna as much as possible so that you can worship him without any personal desire. Or, like, say, Prem Sankirtan locked himself out of his room, right? And then he needs you to give him a key, you know, because you have a key to his room. Maybe you share a bathroom and you can walk through or whatever. So then he's calling you because he wants something, right? Hey, you up there! It's not a pleasing clap, right? Mm. You know, like, if you know that, oh, my God, he locked himself out again, right? Oh, my gosh, he wants something from me. You know, he wants me to get up and go open the door for him. I mean, you know, God is very merciful and kind, and he sees the good. That's what he sees is, oh, wow, he's coming to me. That's wonderful. He loves me on some level. This is great, you know. But it's not as good as if he's trying to actually say hello because he likes you and, you know, he wants to have an exchange with you, right? So the more you're free of envy, the more you just want to make Krishna happy and have a loving exchange with him. You want to play with Krishna. You want to have some fun. You know, and you want him to be happy, basically. Okay? So, let's continue here. Prabhupada says about halfway down through the next paragraph, it says, persons who are under the impression that the absolute truth is impersonal are described as abuddhaya, which means those who do not know the ultimate feature of the absolute truth. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that the supreme realization begins from the impersonal Brahman and then rises to the localized supersoul, but the ultimate word and the absolute truth is the personality of Godhead. Okay? So Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. So if you don't know all three levels of Brahman, then essentially you're on a certain level, you're abuddhaya, right? Like, you don't really see the world in its proper position. You don't have the broad enough vision. Okay? Modern impersonalists are still less intelligent, for they do not know even the They do not even follow their predecessor, Shankaracharya, who has specifically stated that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, so Shankaracharya is a very enigmatic figure, and that he established Advaita Vedanta, and yet at the end of his life, and he was only in his 30s, early 30s, when he left his body, he actually, when all of his followers were surrounding him and he was preparing to die, he started chanting, you know, Bhajagovinda, 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 Buddha Mate. You know, it's like he wrote this whole song saying, worship Govinda, you mudhas, you know, you asses, right? He's surrounded, all of his disciples are around him, and he's telling them, you asses, you know, basically just worship Govinda, you know, give up all of this nonsense and surrender, right? And in other places, he's also written that, you know, Narayana para vyaktat, that Narayana is higher than the avyakta. And so, you know, in this way, Shankaracharya, in many ways, he sort of hinted that truly he's a devotee, because he's an expansion of Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva is a devotee. So, you know, Shankaracharya, he was preaching the impersonalist philosophy for a specific reason. Well, we could talk about that some other time. It's like a restoration of essentially the true understanding of the Vedas through gradual steps. But essentially, he was ultimately a devotee. And so modern impersonalists, though, they don't even follow the teachings of Shankaracharya, right? So modern impersonalists, they don't even follow Advaita Vedanta, right? They usually follow some kind of washed, sort of like, you could say some sort of watered-down version, and they don't really follow the various, like in the Shankaracharya's Advaita Vedanta Sampradaya, they're very, very strict. You know, and they have a very strict line of gurus and stuff like that, and it's a very rigorous process, and they're very precise about their philosophical understandings. But modern impersonalists are oftentimes kind of just sort of hippies, you know, and they don't really follow any particular philosophy. They just believe that the absolute truth is impersonal, and you know, oftentimes they don't even follow any regulative principles of proper behavior or anything like that, right? So it's even as far as impersonalists go, they've fallen very far from the standard established by him. Prabhupada says here, impersonalists, therefore, not knowing the supreme truth, think Krishna to be only the son of Devaki and Vasudeva, or a prince or a powerful living entity. This is also condemned in the Bhagavad Gita 9.11, Avajananti mam buddha, manushyam tanamashatam. Only the fools regard me as an ordinary person. So, this idea here, they see Krishna as a prince or a powerful person, and this is there too with the sort of like the Indologists and stuff like that. Like they come to the conclusion that it's like a really absurd conclusion. You know, that basically Krishna was just like a powerful prince in South India, or, you know, Lord Ram was some kind of ancient king in the distant past who somehow became deified, right? Or Lord Jagannath, you know, like because they're wooden deities. Lord Jagannath ultimately began as tribal people worshipping sticks. You know, like in these tribal villages, you have some sticks shoved in the ground, and they somehow, you know, dance around him and stuff. And so, and that became Lord Jagannath eventually, right? So they have all these sorts of, you know, ideas where they just wildly speculate and try to essentially, you know, that obviously there's no Krishna, all the avatars are fake and bogus. It's a way for brahmanas to try to control people. You know, like the brahmanas are like the intellectual class. And in conjunction with the administrators, the kshatriyas, they conspire to hold the people down and keep them from Christianity ultimately, right? There's a lot of the indologists were Christians, and they saw, you know, this Vedic culture and this religion as an impediment. And these people, you know, Christ has come to give them, you know, all the blessings, and only you can only approach God through Christ, and yet these greedy, envious brahmanas are holding everyone down with this wicked philosophy. And so, you know, therefore they set out to sort of disprove the reality of Krishna and find all sorts of materialistic origins, you know. He's just a mundane king or something like that, right? So anyway, there's all sorts of different ways in which people with ulterior motives will look at Krishna, you know. In fact, there's the example of when Krishna entered the arena at Mathura, right? All the different people saw him differently. The various sages, when he came in, they saw, wow, this is Brahman personified, has come in the arena, right? And the devotees said, oh, this is the personality of Godhead. And, you know, the people from Vrindavan, they look at him, they see it's Krishna, you know, one of the cowherd boys, right? Whereas the demons and people like Kamsa, they look at him and they see this is death personified. You know, they begin blaspheming him and, you know, trying to attack him, right? Trying to kill him. And they hate him. That's how the asuras, that's how they deal with Krishna. And so, you know, you see Krishna from your own perspective according to your own nature. And therefore, those who are abuddhaya, they develop all sorts of speculations about who Krishna is. You know, he's an illusory manifestation of the true one impersonal Brahman, right? Or he's an ancient king, you know, from 5,000 years ago in India who became deified. You know what I mean? It's all the same type of ignorance. But the point being that it's driven by one's own relationship with Krishna, ultimately. It's driven by whether one is envious or not, you know? So, that's there. All right. So, let's go ahead and look at the final purport, or sorry, final paragraph of this purport. Therefore, the monistic contention that the ultimate truth is formless and that form is imposed does not hold true. It is clearly stated here that it is not imposed. So, again, imposed means this vivarta, this projection, just like seeing a snake on a rope, right? That's what it means to impose. From the Bhagavad Gita, we can clearly understand that the forms of the demigods and the form of the Supreme Lord are simultaneously existing, and that Lord Krishna is Sachid Ananda, eternal blissful knowledge. The Vedas also confirm that the Supreme Absolute Truth is Anandamaya Bhyasat, or by nature full of blissful pleasure, and that he is the reservoir of unlimited auspicious qualities. And in the Gita, the Lord says that although he is Aja, unborn, he still appears. So Ajopi San Aviyatma Bhutanam Ishvaropi San, right? That's in the fourth chapter. These are the facts that we should understand from the Bhagavad Gita. All right. So Krishna mentions he's Sachid Ananda Vigraha, you know, that he's eternity, knowledge, and bliss with a spiritual form. We cannot understand how the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be impersonal. The imposition theory of the impersonalist monist is false. As far as the statements of the Gita are concerned, it is clear herein that the Supreme Absolute Truth, Lord Krishna, has both form and personality. All right? So Krishna is both form, he has both form and he's formless. Like there's an aspect of Krishna, the impersonal Brahman, which is formless. But higher than that, and the origin of that, right, that which is emanating this light of Brahman, is the form of Krishna. Is the person, you know, like if you were to push through and move through this impersonal light of bliss, then you'll find the form of God. But you cannot push through it by your own power. You need to have his blessings. Yogamaya Samavrata, right? It's a curtain that's covering your vision. And therefore, as we said before, in the Isha Upanishad, you know, the devotee who's reciting the prayer is praying, please Krishna, remove, you know, this effulgent light so that I can see your face. Okay? So you cannot penetrate, you can bring yourself to this impersonal light by your own power. You know, by the power of your austerities, you can have some realization, some experience. But you can't go beyond it without personally surrendering, without developing this quality of non-enviousness, without acknowledging Krishna's personality and worshipping Krishna, bowing down to Krishna, receiving his blessings. Then you can actually move through that stage of Brahman into the highest stage of Brahman. All right. Any questions about that? Yeah.
So how do the Brahma gods become like Brahmatma gods? Is it how does that happen?
Yeah, through Guru Parampara. Well, you know, and through association. Like, say you're a Brahmavadi and and there's a difference between Brahmavadis and Mayavadis, right? In other words, the Advaita Vedanta philosophy of Shankara, which concludes that the personality of Godhead is material, that's considered offensive. It's blasphemy. Brahmavadis don't say that. In fact, Brahmavadis, they just say essentially everything is Brahman. You know, the material world is Brahman, right? Your Brahman is a soul. And if they see Krishna, you know, Krishna's Brahman too, you know? But they don't really know the position of the personality of Godhead as the absolute Brahman. But once they do, then naturally they'll be attracted. You could see, for example, with Shukadeva Goswami, right? He was he wasn't a devotee, and yet he heard, you know, the Bhagavatam from his father, Vyasadeva, and therefore immediately he becomes a devotee. He was, and there's the Atmaram verse, right? He was perfectly self-satisfied meditating on Brahman, and yet when he heard about the personality of Godhead, he became attracted, and the bliss that came in the association, hearing and chanting about Krishna, that's actually, even those who are self-satisfied as Brahmavadis, they become attracted to it. It's blissful, right? Like they're experiencing the highest taste, sukhasya kantikasya cha, right? They're experiencing this highest Brahman, this pleasure of ananda, of spiritual bliss, and yet when they also hear about Krishna from personalities, from devotees, and people like Vyasadeva, Narada Muni, then they also become attracted. They experience even greater bliss, right? It's like here they are meditating on Brahman, and then they hear about Krishna, and it's like, whoa, you know, this is even more Brahman, like, this is like super Brahman, right? This is, you know, I was blissful, and then I heard the chanting of Hare Krishna, and then it's like, wow, you know, it's just blasting through my impersonal Brahman bliss, and I'm experiencing a taste which is just unbelievable, right? It's coming from a higher level of Brahman. It's inundating my consciousness, and therefore I'm attracted to it, right? So that's what happens to the Brahmavadis. So basically the same thing that happens to even materialists, right? Like you're given the mercy of a devotee. And you may be a Brahmavadi and you're situated in Brahman and you're given the mercy of a devotee, and then you immediately taste Krishna on the spiritual platform, right? Because you're already transcendental to material nature. That's the position of the Jnani, when we heard in the previous verses. Yeah? The Jnani, he's basically already Brahman realized, and then somehow or other, by the grace of the devotees, he gets, you know, a book or something, right? And then he becomes a devotee, but becomes a devotee on a very high platform. Okay? Is that all right? Does that answer the question? Okay. Let's take a look at the next verse, text 25. Naham prakasya sarvasya yoga maya samavrataha mudayam na bhijanati lokamam ajamavayam. I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them, I am covered by my internal potency, and therefore they do not know that I am unborn and infallible. You see? So Krishna blocks the vision of who he truly is from those who are unqualified. Mudha, these are the abuddha, right? The unintelligent are here being called mudhas, or those who are foolish. Yam na bhijanati. So I am, right? They don't know me. I'm not knowable to them. They can't see me. They can't understand me. They can't experience me. They can't have knowledge of me. Why? Yoga maya samavrataha. So avrata means to cover something, right? Like vritrasura covers the skies. Avrata literally means to, like, just, it's like when the moon passes in front of the sun. It's avrata. So samavrata means to totally cover, completely cover. Yoga maya. So Krishna is completely covered by his yoga maya. You can't see him. He's blocking your vision. You know, that's why people demand, show me God. But they can't demand, you know, because he's covered. You have to qualify yourself to move through the yoga maya samavrata, the yoga maya curtain. You have to qualify yourself by worshipping Krishna, surrendering to Krishna. And when he's pleased with you, then he'll reveal himself. Yeah. Naham prakasya sarvasya. So Krishna is not manifest to everyone. Just like you see God, he's prakash, you know, he's shining out brilliantly. And this vision of God is extremely powerful. You see in the Bible, this idea of the vision of God, you know, like, it'll actually kill you, you know, that's the Bible idea, right? Like when Moses, you know, sees God on the mountain, then he only sees God from behind, like God is walking away or something. You know? It's like a very universal form type vision. It's clouds and lightning and thunder and all this stuff. It's like this huge, powerful vision. Then he kind of sees the back of God, right? Which, you know, that's a kind of a, you could derive from that the idea within the Bible that God is a person, right? That he has a form. So anyway, he sees the back of God. But the idea is like if you were to see God full front, you know, like his face and everything, and he's talking to you, just kill you, you know, you can't handle it. It'll just, like, you know, you'll evaporate, right? Or you see, what's this, Indiana Jones, right, in the Raiders of the Lost Ark? You know, they open the Ark of the Covenant, and it comes out, and everyone's, all the Nazis, their faces start melting and stuff. So anyway, there's this kind of idea that, you know, God is so powerful that if you somehow see him, then, you know, you burst into flames. So, but the idea in the Vedas is, you know, no, if you're filled with love, then he'll reveal himself to you. You can directly see him. You can have a vision of him. You know, Dhruva Mara, you know, you see Arjuna has a similar experience on the chariot, which is, you know, there's no face melting or anything, but he does become perturbed, right? He sees the universal form, the Virat Rupa, then he sees the Kala Rupa, which is the form of devastation, the form of God as the destroyer and the form of time. Time I am, right? Kalawasmi. And, you know, he sees all these fiery mouths opening up and with fangs, and they're eating different. The rivers of warriors are flowing into his mouths, and some are shooting into his mouth like moths into a flame, you know. So there's all this horrific vision, and it's burning the entire universe, and there's thousands of eyes and thousands of mouths, and Arjuna feels like it's burning, you know. Please, please, you know, take away this form. I don't want to see it. Let me see your Saumyavapu, you know. First let me see your four-headed form. Let me see your Saumyavapu, your beautiful form. So Krishna also has forms which are very beautiful and very sweet to see, very easy to see, you know. And I mean, very difficult to see because you have to have the quality of devotion, but very easy on the eyes, right? Very, very blissful for the consciousness. There's no fear or anything like that. Rather, you're just filled with the ultimate vision of beauty. Yamshamasundaravachintyagunasadupam. You see the tribanga, the threefold bending form of Krishna with the flute. This is the most beautiful form of Krishna, right? So that's the ultimate revelation of God, you know. And he'll reveal these forms to you, but only when you're qualified. And if you're not qualified, too bad, right? You can't see them, okay? And Prabhupada says, you know, when people would say, "Show me God." He would say, well, why do you want to see God? Why not hear God? You can chant the Maha Mantra, you can hear God. Yeah, and so that's actually the way. Instead of trying to see him with your eyes, you can hear him with your ears. And by gradually hearing, then you come to understand who he is. Right? Either hearing from Bhagavatam or hearing the mantra, his name. And then gradually you begin to see who he is in the name. Right? That's how it is. It's not like the Yoga Samaya Samavrata. It may be that God reveals himself to you. You know, come in your room in the ashram and there he is, right? Something like that. That could happen. You know, that happened to Dhruva Maharaj, right? He's meditating and then he opens his eyes and boom, you know, there's Vishnu, right? But with the general process is that you hear God, and first you hear his name, and you don't really see, you can't quote unquote see him in the name. It's just a vibration. You know, and it doesn't mean anything, you know. But then as you become purified and more surrendered, it becomes Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. And you begin to actually hear the mantra and hear, you know, and experience the qualities of Krishna. And the mantra, you begin to feel, you become filled with bliss and the ecstasy of actually experiencing the name. Right? And then gradually, guna, rupa, you know, the form begins to manifest. You actually start seeing Krishna in the spiritual world, you know, in your vision, internal vision. And then, you know, eventually lila, you know, eventually you'll see the pastimes of Krishna. Right? So that's how the yoga maya samavratas are moved. Yeah? Is that you gradually develop an appreciation for what the holy name is. You're gradually able to see the name for what it truly is. Okay? By your own, you know, developing your own spiritual qualification. Prabhupada says here, it may be argued that since Krishna was present on this earth and was visible to everyone, then why isn't he manifest to everyone now? But actually he was not manifest to everyone. When Krishna was present, there were only a few people who could understand him to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the assembly of Kurus, when Shishupal spoke against Krishna being elected president of the assembly, Bhishma supported him and proclaimed him to be the Supreme God. Similarly, the Pandavas and a few others knew that he was the Supreme, but not everyone. He was not revealed to the non-devotees and the common man. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that but for his pure devotees, all men consider him to be like themselves. Okay? So you might be, you know, imagine if you somehow could go back in time to Mahabharata era, and as a devotee, you're walking through, you know, what's now Punjab or something, and you see Krishna and his retinue passing through from Dwarka, or to Dwarka from Hastinapur, right? There's that whole scene in the Bhagavatam where they're walking and all the people are seeing them and stuff. So, you know, imagine if you are walking through the desert or, you know, the dry area of the Punjab and you happen to see Krishna and all the Dwarkavasis traveling toward Dwarka, you would immediately recognize, oh my gosh, you know, it's the personality of Godhead, right? That would be revealed to you in your heart. you're walking along chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, and then all of a sudden you see, you know, there's Krishna and Rukmini or something, right? And they're walking along and people are fanning them and, you know, throwing flowers and people are chanting, and, you know, it's just be, and it would just be this beautiful vision of Vrindavan, you know, or a beautiful vision of, you know, the spiritual world to you, right? And so, you know, you'd see the retinue pass and you bow down and pay obeisances and Krishna smiles at you, right? And then a devotee comes and says, oh, Krishna wanted me to give you these remnants. And you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Here's some clothes that he wore. You know, take these with you back to your village or whatever, right? And then you would just be enthralled. You know, this is the greatest experience of your life. But if you're a demon and you see that same retinue coming forward, you're like, you know, look at this rascal. Right, coming through, all these wealthy people coming through. Let's go get some dacoits. I'll call my friends. We'll come try to rob them. You know, let me go get some people. We'll kidnap all their wives. Right, that's what they tried to do Arjuna. Right, when Krishna had left the world, you know, he's trying to bring them the other way back to Hastinapur, and immediately, you know, let's kidnap these goddesses of fortune and, you know, take them. Of course, there's a whole pastime involved there, but I'm saying people can approach with that mentality, right? That. You know, this. How dare this rascal, you know, or that was the mentality of Pralambasura, right? He saw Krishna and Balaram enjoying with the gopis, and he's like, you know, look at these rascals, you know, I'm going to get these gopis for myself, all right? And he tried to kidnap them. So it depends on your consciousness, okay? That's how you'll see who Krishna is. You have to have that qualification. In the prayers of Kunti in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.19, it is said that the Lord is covered by the curtain of Yogamaya, and thus ordinary people cannot understand him. I'm sorry, I can't remember that verse. I know it. I actually had mentioned it in a Bhagavatam class recently. So this Yogamaya curtain is also confirmed in the Ishopanishad Mantra 15, in which the devotee prays, and this is the one I was quoting earlier, Hiranmayena Patrena Satyasa Pihitambukam Tatvam Bhushan Apavranu Satya Dharmaya Drishtaye. O my Lord, you are the maintainer of the entire universe, and devotional service to you is the highest religious principle. Therefore I pray that you will also maintain me. Your transcendental form is covered by the Yogamaya. The Brahma Jyoti is the covering of the internal potency. May you kindly remove this glowing effulgence that impedes my seeing your Satchidananda Vigraha, your eternal form of bliss and knowledge. The Supreme Personality of Godhead in his transcendental form of bliss and knowledge is covered by the internal potency of the Brahma Jyoti, and the less intelligent and personalist cannot see the Supreme on this account. All right? So let's take a look at text 26. Vedaham samatitani vartamani cha charjana vartamanani charjana bhavishyani cha bhutani mam tu vedana kashtana. O Arjuna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I know everything that has happened in the past, all that is happening in the present, and all things that are yet to come. I am the knower of all living entities, but me, no one knows. Prabhupada says here, here's the question. Here the question of the personality and impersonality is clearly stated. If Krishna, the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, were Maya, material, as the impersonalists consider him to be, then like the living entity, he would change his body and forget everything about his past life. Anyone with a material body cannot remember his past life, nor can he foretell his future life, nor can he predict the outcome of his present life. Therefore, he cannot know what is happening in the past, present, and future. Unless one is liberated from material contamination, he cannot know past, present, and future. So Krishna is omniscient, right? Vedaham samatitani, bhavishyani chabutani. So Krishna knows everything, past, present, and future. Excuse me. So, but nobody knows him. So he's in this position where he knows everyone, he knows everything, he's omniscient, he knows everything in the past, present, future. He's not bound by time. There's no such thing as ignorance for Krishna. Now think about that. Like, we look at the world and we have a curtain of ignorance. What to speak of towards God, just towards material existence in general. We don't, and even on a very gross physical level, we don't know what's on the other side of that wall. There could be someone standing at the door with their ear to the door. We don't know, right? We don't know what's going on in that next room. So it's like we're completely in ignorance. And even our senses, we don't even know what's going on in this room, ultimately. Right? Like, we have our eyes and our ears and our nose, but they're human eyes and human ears and human noses, right? And you could have a dog in here has a totally different experience of this room because his smell is so great. I mean, or you have a bear, like you put a bear in this room, he could smell the prasadam hiding in your locker upstairs in the corner room. Right? He knows what was for breakfast, right? He can smell it on your fingers, even from breakfast. He didn't clean very well. So he can smell, or that little spot of khichdi on your shirt. Is he looking down? Yes. There's no spot. But he can smell it, right? So he has a totally, his vision of the room is different. His experience of it is totally different. And so, you know, we don't even know what's going on right here and now. And so we're really covered by a thick layer of ignorance. But for Krishna, there's no ignorance. From Krishna's perspective, whatever he desires immediately manifests. What to speak of that? Whatever he desires to know, it's immediately he knows. You know, there's no learning process, right? Like when Krishna learned from Sandipani Muni. He didn't have to try. You know, it's like he knows everything already. So Vedaham Samatitani, Krishna knows everything, and yet he, no one knows. It doesn't go the other way, right? Looking up towards him, you can't see anything. When he's looking down towards you, he sees everything. Okay? So in Prabhupada, of course, making the point that if Krishna was material, how could that be? You know, how could Krishna be omniscient? And he makes the point earlier also, in the second chapter, Prabhupada makes the point that if Krishna was material, and he's like a manifestation of Maya on some level, then how is it that the Bhagavad Gita has any value? If it's spoken by a material personality who's ultimately an illusion, and a manifestation of illusion, why are the impersonalists quoting his book? Why are they trying to use Krishna as an authority if he's in Maya? You know? So it's not a very consistent idea. Prabhupada says here, certainly the transcendental body of Sri Krishna is not perishable. This is jumping ahead about maybe 5-10 sentences. He is just like the sun, and Maya is just like a cloud. In the material world, we can see that there is a sun and that there are clouds and different stars and planets. And the clouds may cover all these in the sky temporarily, but this covering is only apparent to our limited vision. The sun, the moon, and stars are not actually covered. Similarly, Maya cannot cover the Supreme Lord. By his internal potency, he is not manifest to the less intelligent class of men. So just as the sun, you know, the sun is never covered by the clouds. Only from our vision is it covered. Once you take that airplane flight, you know, out of LAX, and you climb to a few thousand feet, you go right to the clouds. And it's sunny, yeah? You've ever been in an airplane and you see, it's always on the top of the clouds, they're always sunny, because the sun, it's never really covered by the clouds, it's just we're covered by the clouds. So in the same way, Krishna, he's always Prakash, he's always manifest, he's always there, shining brilliantly, but no one can see him because we're all covered by clouds. You know? So as stated in the third verse of this chapter, out of millions and millions of men, some try to become perfect in this human form of life, and out of thousands and thousands of such perfected men, hardly one can understand what Lord Krishna is. Even if one is perfected by realization of impersonal Brahman or localized power from Paramatma, he cannot possibly understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, without being in Krishna consciousness. So again, it's only Krishna's mercy which allows you to understand him. All right, so we've got about 5 minutes, but we'll go ahead and end a little bit early. And here's that verse that I couldn't remember. It's text 28. Yesham tvantikatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandvamohan nirmukta bhajantimam dridhavrata. All right. So thank you very much. All glories to Prabhupada.